Searching for credible data to back up your strategies and proposals? With an Insider Intelligence subscription, you get thousands of forecasts, charts, and insights on key topics like retail and e-commerce trends in 2023, marketplace growth, direct selling strategies for CPG brands, and retail marketing expectations for the 2023 holiday season. Join over 100,000 subscribers and start leveraging our trusted analysts' research and data. Learn more about how to save time and get buy-in faster at insiderintelligence.com. Hello, listeners. Today is Wednesday, August 16th. Welcome to Behind the Numbers, Reimagining Retail, an eMarketer podcast. This is the show where we talk about how retail collides with every part of our lives. I'm your host, Sarah Levo. Today's episode topic is grocery e-commerce. First, let's meet today's guests. Joining me for today's episode, we have senior analyst Blake Droesch. Welcome back, Blake.
Hey, Sarah. Good to be here.
Good to have you. And on the Retail Pod for the first time is senior director of content, Becky Schilling. Hey, Becky.
Hey, Sarah. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us. Okay, let's get started with free sample. Our Did You Know segment, where I share a fun fact, tidbit, or question. Today's question is, do either of you know what the first self-service grocery store was? And bonus points for if you know when. Cricket sound effect can go here.
I'll take a complete stab in the dark and just go off personal experience that I think my local Stop and Shop had self-checkout going back to...
Wait, point of clarification, not self-checkout, self-service. So like not a butcher counter, like think way further back, like shopping cart shelf situation.
Oh, that's right. I remember this. I remember the antidote that it really confused people that they had to go and pick their own items off the shelf. And it was a long time ago, but I don't remember who the retailer was.
Was it Piggly Wiggly?
Yeah, Becky had an advantage because we put this in our newsletter once.
Oh, did we?
Like a year ago. Yeah, it was Piggly Wiggly in Memphis in 1916. Soon after the advent of the self-service grocery store came the invention of the shopping cart. Around this time, consumer packaged goods also started getting unique branding and labeling to stand out on the shelves, which to me is the most interesting part. Like everything we talk about in relation to the digital grocery shelf and retail media and standing out as a brand started out with picking up your products yourself instead of asking the butcher to go get it for you. Now it's time for our next segment, Retail Me This, Retail Me That, where we discuss an interesting retail topic. Today's topic is grocery e-commerce. Growth in digital grocery sales is outpacing growth in the number of digital grocery buyers in the U.S. The overall digital grocery sales will increase by close to 20%, according to our forecast, while the number of digital grocery buyers will increase by just 2%. So that means that the people who are buying groceries online are spending more money. Blake, can you expand a bit on what we can learn from this forecast?
Yeah, sure. So just to frame things a little bit, the industry narrative around digital grocery has been very much tied to the pandemic that, of course, you had this small but fast growing sector of e-commerce that really took off during 2020 and 2021. And since then, a lot of the conversation around digital grocery has been really benchmarking the demand against where it was during the pandemic. But the industry since then has really moved beyond that because sales growth is no longer being driven by new adopters like it was during the pandemic. It's being driven by heavy digital grocery users. And from, of course, you know, a retail and marketing standpoint, that completely changes the game from, you know, retailers and delivery platforms that are looking to court new adopters versus the current circumstances is that the retailers and delivery services that are fighting for growth in this really competitive market are now catering to these heavy users.
So you're trying to grab more share of the existing users? Are they still trying to adopt more users?
You know, I think slowly but surely there's always going to be a little bit of an increase in adoption. I mean, we see growth in digital buyers in general in our forecast on an annual basis, and that sort of low single digit percentage. So yes, I mean, there's of course always going to be new buyers coming into the market. But when you look at really, you know, what is driving growth and, you know, 20% food and beverage, health, personal care, and beauty. So sort of these categories that make up the larger grocery e-commerce category, these are some of the fastest growing in e-commerce over the next couple of years. So if you're really, you know, trying to capitalize on that growth, your focus at this point is not those new adopters. It's really the people that are existing buyers that are doing more and more of their average, you know, weekly grocery shopping online.
Okay, so we have that 20% growth in how much those people are spending online. What sorts of things are ticking that growth up by that big a number?
Yeah, so I think that's really interesting. And that's why, you know, a lot of my research now is focused around the buying trends and the habits of consumers who are buying groceries online more than once per month. And then, of course, you know, what can retailers do to turn those casual buyers into heavy users? Because there are certain categories, you know, snacks is one of them, coffee and tea, pantry items, baking goods, condiments, etc. These are sort of high penetration categories at this point, right? Whereas the majority of people who consider themselves, you know, digital grocery buyers, so they buy groceries online at least sometimes, are heavily buying in these categories. But if you isolate those frequent digital grocery buyers, so people who are shopping online for groceries multiple times per month, you're, you know, probably, go figure, you're seeing an increase in perishable buying. So fruits and vegetables, frozen foods, bread and bakery products. And what's interesting about those categories is that they do have a smaller base of people who are buying them. But because they're perishables, you know, the nature of perishables, they're being purchased more frequently. So you've got a category like, you know, fruits and vegetables, where you have fewer people are buying them, but the people that are buying them are coming back and they're placing weekly orders online, which is, you know, having an impact on the way that they buy their other non-perishable goods online and in stores as well.
Okay, so if I'm Kroger and I have someone who is, let's do Amazon. If I'm Amazon and I have someone who is buying coffee once a month, my role here is to turn them into that weekly apple and pear buyer as well. But that's like totally different, right? Like buying coffee online is a completely different behavior than buying fruits and vegetables, which self-service grocery world, I'm used to touching and picking up. Becky, I'm going to come to you with this one. How can a platform convince people to buy these perishable items online?
Yeah, you have to take away that uncomfortability of not being able to see, touch, smell your produce, your fruits, and your vegetables. So a couple of things that you can think about would be photos. Can you put photos up on your website that says, look at this banana from ripe to unripe? Pick which category, which level you would like to go, and our shopper or picker will pick that produce from you. Or being able to ask a question on how many days from delivery would you like to be able to eat this? Or what level of ripeness do you like? Being able to get some sense of what the customer is looking for. The flip side of that is that you then have to train your employees who are picking to be able to recognize that and be able to take what the consumer is saying and put that into actuality.
Yeah, it seems really expensive to get a group of people that are now going through all of the bananas to get the correct banana, only for that banana to be a little browner when it goes out the door in an hour.
And I think you're right. And it almost, it's funny when you think about it and you also think about the margins in these types of categories, like it does seem almost ridiculous that a whole new product offering and shopper communication tools and all of these different ways of, you know, increasing visibility and communication with the digital customer would be worth it. But I think that there are other also maybe more traditional ways, just including, you know, deeper discounts and promotions, incentivizing people who are, you know, not, it's interesting the example that you brought up, because it is obviously, there are a lot of people who are just buying their coffee on Amazon, and that's completely different to the person who's placing the Amazon Fresh or the Whole Foods order, where you have, you know, a shopper going to the store or a warehouse and delivering it rather than receiving your, you know, your coffee or your shampoo like through the mail. But, you know, there are a really large percentage of digital grocery buyers who are using those delivery services. And there could be ways of, you know, incentivizing through discounts, like the people who are already having pickers and shoppers go to the store for, you know, any number of goods, but they might be holdouts in the fruits or vegetables category because they like to feel the produce. They like to, you know, make sure everything's ripe and to the quality that they want it to be to actually get them to sort of go that next step. So it is a little bit of an incremental game as well. But I do think that, you know, some of the tools that Becky was describing, you know, could also be really efficient. But yes, it's certainly quite an overhaul.
But you also have to think of sometimes when I go to the store and I'm looking for an avocado and I want a ripe avocado because I want it for that night, 5 times out of 10, I feel like that ripe avocado isn't available. It's all about dependency of when the produce is coming in. So it's not a sure game to go in store to get exactly what you're looking for either. So consumers just have to be okay with that.
Yeah, but the difference is that when I don't see that ripe avocado, I'm like, oh, there was no ripe avocado. If I'm asking someone else to buy the ripe avocado and they give me an underripe avocado, I'm like, they didn't pick the right avocado. It is sort of like a psychological difference there.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I don't know. Maybe these delivery companies need to just, you know, they go pick your groceries and then they just drive around with a crate of avocados so you can go and see it yourself.
They bring the groceries to you. We can invent the fruit cart. All of these companies competing in this arena are all going at it in different ways. Who do you think has the best shot at winning future growth in digital grocery? Becky, why don't you take that one first?
So I'm going to do two because it's my first podcast and I'm going to break the rules a little bit. So
yeah, no one ever breaks the rules on, I said breaks the rules. On a repeat.
Is that a Freudian slip?
Maybe.
So my first one is Instacart. I feel like one of the biggest challenges of retailers setting up any kind of online grocery business is the logistics and the operational background. Grocers work on such thin margins that it can often be very prohibitive to try to add new services where they're not seeing the bottom line benefit. So I think Instacart is a company that can help grocers do that. I also think Instacart, just with its business itself, has really great promise and really great growth opportunities. My second one is going to be Amazon. And I know I've been down on them a little bit lately, but they are really trying to turn around their grocery business. And if you see some of the moves that they've made just in the last week or so, allowing non-Prime members to purchase fresh items for delivery, opening up hundreds of Whole Foods private labels for sale on Amazon, and then allowing customers to place items from Whole Foods, Amazon Fresh, and Amazon.com in the same carts. They're really trying to make some fresh inroads into their fresh delivery or their fresh grocery program. And I think that we might see a little bit of growth from them coming in a positive direction.
Becky, I love you saying, I know I've been down on Amazon a lot recently. The podcast listeners are joining your opinion forming already in progress. Yeah, I mean, Instacart, like at the start of the pandemic, had like 230% growth according to our forecast in U.S. grocery sales. That's crazy high, but it's still pretty high. It's still at 15% growth. And next year, we expect that to be a bit higher at 15.2% growth. Well, that's about the same. But yeah, I mean, they're still healthy in terms of grocery sales. Blake, who do you see as winning grocery share?
Yeah, I think that there's a strong case to be made that Walmart can really run away with some serious share. They're already the market leader in terms of having the largest share of U.S. grocery e-commerce sales. According to our forecast, they surpassed Amazon, I want to say, in 2019. But there are two reasons. And one is sort of tied to this conversation about, you know, fresh and frozen foods and, you know, having shopper communication tools. Walmart really, they deliver all of their groceries. So they, rather than, companies that use third-party intermediaries like Instacart. So I think Walmart because of the fact that they control the fulfillment of the orders all the way down to the delivery, you know, the gathering of the items in stores and in the warehouses, the packaging, the drivers, the people who are actually doing the delivery. They control that whole fulfillment chain. So they really could train their associates to pick the produce that is of the best quality and that is, you know, of the preferable ripeness according to, you know, what the customer wants. And they're then able to, you know, create a little bit more assurance around the quality of the products they're delivering and could help to win over some of the digital grocery customers who are maybe buying non-perishables but are still holdouts for perishables. The second reason is just the fact that they are the clear leaders in click and collect. And when you look at what's going to be driving digital grocery growth over the next couple of years, a lot of it is coming from sales growth in click and collect, not delivery. And Walmart just very simply has the largest brick and mortar footprint. They have the largest customer base of physical store grocery shoppers. And I just think that, you know, when it comes down to sort of brass tacks, it's that very simple advantage of just having a large customer base and a large brick and mortar footprint.
And a new report from Brick Meets Click that just came out backs you up on that one, Blake. So they reported today that the U.S. online grocery market was down 7% in July year over year. However, repeat intent rate for mass over grocery is 18 points higher, and mass would be Walmart in this instance. So they're seeing exactly what you're saying.
And we didn't even get into click and collect. I mean, that's a whole separate episode. Before we move into the next half, just one thing that all three of those companies, Instacart, Amazon, and Walmart, especially Amazon and Walmart, have in common is a big and growing ad business supporting their slim grocery margins. Definitely any place that you can get other revenues is going to be helpful when building out grocery. Becky and Blake, are either of you digital grocery buyers?
Yes, I'm a heavy grocery buyer based on Blake's report. 2 to 3 times a month from Fresh Direct.
Funny enough, I'm not a frequent digital grocery buyer. I probably place like one order a month for like coffee and some other, you know, household essentials that I buy on Amazon, but I like going to the grocery store. I'm one of those people. I think it's just because I like to cook. So I like to go sort of like poke around and, you know, see what's new and kind of like shop more on instinct than on restocking, which I think is still more conducive to physical stores.
Yeah, I'm not a digital grocery buyer at all. Honestly, I probably could afford to be. I think that I would have much better stocked shelves if I got into that, but I'm stubborn. It took me until last week to set up Apple Pay. It'll take me another couple of years before I get into digital grocery. Okay, let's keep moving. It's time for our next segment, Loyalty Point Counterpoint, where our guests debate two different sides of an issue. Today, Blake is arguing that Uber and DoorDash will push even further into grocery, while Becky has the counterpoint that consumers won't adopt intermediaries for grocery. Blake, why don't you lay out your opening arguments here first?
Yeah, so I think, you know, plain and simple, both Uber and DoorDash already have really, really big customer bases, you know, primarily through their restaurant delivery and Uber with their rideshare services. And both are very set on basically creating a flywheels of their own through their paid memberships, DashPass and Uber One, that will get their customers to use the platform, not just for their core utilities, but for other services that they provide. So whether it's non-grocery retail, partnering with retailers like that sell sporting goods or home goods or office supplies, but grocery is really the biggest piece after their core utilities. And in DoorDash's most recent earnings call, they reported their best quarter ever, and a lot of it was attributed to their grocery orders, which they say increased 25%. And if you look at some of our consumer surveys, DoorDash in particular is actually getting a good amount of use in terms of people who have said that they've used the platform to order groceries specifically. And I think that they occupy a very small share of digital grocery sales right now. But because of the fact that it can, you know, help drive revenue in DoorDash's case, I think it's just an area that they're going to lean into in the coming years. And it's going to be a real, you know, focus to get their existing customer base to start buying groceries on the app.
Okay, so Uber and DoorDash, you have a bunch of people who already have the apps on their phone, are already used to the drivers showing up at their door with some sort of offering, and could be easily convinced to buy groceries within the platforms. Becky, what is your counterpoint argument here?
Well, I agree with what Blake said, and I do think that both of those companies are smart to go after the grocery sales. I don't think that the e-commerce grocery business is going to see the uptick from getting sales from these two companies. And the reason I don't think so is because I don't believe that consumers are going to adopt that behavior. And the main reason I don't think that is the searchability. Consumers do not need to go to an Uber or a DoorDash to find out what their local grocer is. They know what that grocer is. And I would project that they will go to the Kroger website or to the Stop and Shop and order directly from them. They don't need to use that app to get their grocery.
Could you make the same argument when these apps were starting off as food delivery apps that people already know their local Chinese food restaurant and they're not going to go to the app?
No, I think that's completely different. I think you know some of the restaurants within your radius, but I could not tell you the restaurants that are three blocks away from me. And I think that that's what a Seamless or a DoorDash or an Uber Eats does really, really well, is that it puts all of that at your fingertips. It makes it discoverable for those restaurants. You know that this restaurant is going to deliver for you. You know what the menu is. You can order, you can pay, you can do everything through that app. Whereas ordering from a restaurant where you have to call them, because most of these restaurants pre-pandemic did not have delivery set up through their websites, it's a whole nother ballgame when you have to call the restaurant, put in your order with a person, pay over the phone, or pay with cash for those of us who pay with cash still. It's a completely different environment and atmosphere, and it's not conducive for convenience, which is what I think that these apps are really, really great for. But I don't think that the convenience necessarily translates into the grocery shopping experience the same way that it does for the restaurants.
Whose grocery shopping is already convenient. You can either go into the aisles and pick it yourself, or there's an existing interface for buying groceries. Like, thoughts on Becky's argument?
Yeah, I mean, I think I agree that, you know, it's definitely a bigger push because it is a slightly different business model and service that they're offering. But what sort of sways me on that argument is the cost, right? So shopping for groceries online comes with added delivery fees. And what companies like DoorDash and Uber are doing is they're not just trying to get people to start buying groceries on their apps. They're trying to get people to sign up for their paid memberships because they're already frequent rideshare customers or they're already frequent grocery delivery customers. So if you can get them to sign up for that because they're already existing customers, then they're saving money. And all of a sudden, okay, now they have a grocery delivery offering where included in that membership fee, they can also get free delivery on groceries. So these might be people who don't shop for groceries online. They don't because it's too expensive. They don't want to pay the fees when they can go to the store, but they use rideshare enough or they get restaurant delivery enough that they were swayed to sign up for these services. And all of a sudden now they're getting grocery for free. So they might try it. If they do try it, then they're more likely to become loyal and use that platform for grocery buying because of the fact that they're already getting the delivery paid for through these apps. The other thing is that a lot of local grocery stores do not have their own interfaces for ordering groceries online. So Instacart has really cornered the market. So it's going to be very difficult for DoorDash and Uber to get in on some of Instacart's business, which is primarily, you know, based on taking legacy grocers that do not have their own infrastructure to have an app or a delivery, and they do that fulfillment for them. But, you know, DoorDash and Uber have been very aggressive in creating these partnerships. So it's maybe not ideal for people to want to, you know, go on and browse an Uber or DoorDash to, you know, find their grocery stores. I agree with you in that sense, but it is, you know, certainly a way for DoorDash or Uber to sort of get into that market by partnering with some of these local chains. And if they have customers that want to order their, you know, order from these grocers online and they're promoting in the store that they're on Uber or DoorDash, then that could be another way of sort of sneaking in and getting a little bit of share in this market.
This is a really difficult task for Uber and DoorDash because you're working with grocery, which already has famously slim margins. Then you're offering free delivery, paid subscription delivery, but still free in some sense, which is really expensive. It seems like a really difficult line for these companies to walk.
Well, it's difficult for the retailers too, right? Like retailers operate on grocery retailers operate on very, very thin margins. I mean, Trader Joe's famously does not offer delivery. They tried it in New York City for a little while and they canceled it in 2019, saying that they were going to have to pass on all those costs to the customers and saying that we want our in-store experience to be the experience that you have at Trader Joe's. So, and even Walmart has said that we have to be really careful about not building out a segment of the business that's going to negatively impact our in-store shopping, which goes back to Blake's whole point about frequent buyers but still coming into the store to get certain items. Because even Walmart recognizes that you can't build something out at the cost of your core business.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that, you know, if you're a company like Walmart or even Target, which has made a lot of plans to redesign the stores so the digital fulfillment does not get in the way of both inventory, depleting the resources of the staff, or in the way of the customer experience. You have shoppers just, you know, walking around the stores, have been able to amend that. But I think, you know, with the, if you're looking at it from the perspective of like these delivery services, when it's becoming very apparent, particularly with Instacart, but with all of them, that, you know, advertising is going to be a really, really important revenue stream for them going forward and trying to achieve, you know, actual growth, then it starts to make a little bit more sense why they're willing to, you know, take the hit or sort of skirt that line in an industry like grocery where the margins are so slim.
Absolutely. Advertising and subscription revenue is definitely a thing to watch, as is these companies rearranging their stores, changing things up so that their actual infrastructure can support delivery. That's all we have time for today. So thank you so much for joining us today, Blake.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
And thanks for being here, Becky.
Enjoyed it. Thank you.
Please give us a rating and review wherever you listen to podcasts. And follow us on Instagram at behindthenumbers_podcast. Thank you to our listeners and to Victoria, who edits the podcast and keeps it fresh. Does that work?
I like it.
We'll be back next Wednesday with another episode of Reimagining Retail, an eMarketer podcast. And tomorrow, join Marcus for another episode of the Behind the Numbers Daily.